Hi guys, and welcome to another edition of Talking Finance with Dean. Today, I've got the very lovely Victoria Costa on the line as my humans story. How are you?
Good, Dean. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good.
Now, thanks for taking your time out of the day to do this with me.
Thanks for having me.
And basically, congratulations in order. I believe you've got a book launch.
13 copies sold. We just launched on Tuesday. So 13 and counting. Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to hope we get more because I absolutely love your story behind what this is. So your book is called Zero to CEO, right?
Yeah.
And I think what I want to do with this particular conversation is introduce you to not only to the wider finance coffee community, but to the other audiences who are listening in, either from overseas or not, because weirdly, I think 14% of my listeners are overseas, which is really weird.
Wow, interesting.
I don't know why. 1% from Vietnam, but that's probably one family.
yeah, this is mom and dad. And
probably, yeah. I understand what I'm saying, but that's okay. But what I guess I wanted to say was, I think we said this initially before the recording started, was that you've been in the finance game for a while. I think you've got a very strong brand. People know who you are and what you do.
Been around for a while, haven't I?
well, no, not just that. But it's just you've done the right things, which is why people know who you are. And where I think the I wanted to do these humans conversation was more the background in terms of what made Victoria.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So your book, Zero to CEO, I'm going to copy that heading, if that's okay, for this particular podcast.
Yeah, 100%. I'll send you a signed copy for that.
Oh, fantastic. So I first heard about the story and, I know... And then, but then when I heard, hey, you, there was at one point, you were, you'd say that you were a housing commission mama, single mum. So what was really, what was it like? What was, how did that end up, how did you end up in finance? And then, what was the drive? Was it, was it the anger to get going to the motivation?
Like behind the whole, credit repair business and all the rest of it. I think, going back to those days, they weren't bad days. A lot of people tend to look down, and I had this sense of, shame about, the term being a single mother, which I hate. It's got stigma attached to it. Often the other mums at, my son's school, for example, didn't want me hanging around. I'm like, I don't want your husbands. Do you know what I mean? But Catholic primary school. But I feel that I was quite blessed to get housing commission. Before that, after my divorce, Nicola, I was only two. I was living with my brother, then I was living with my stepdad, and then my mom. And having your kids come back, in their early 30s after a divorce, is probably every parent's heartbreak and headache at the same time. So I felt like a burden and all the rest of it. And because I'd actually worked for my ex-husband, I was left with no job, no money, nowhere to live, nothing. So when I got housing, that was a blessing for me, and I think I then used that as the first building block to say, hey, I've got an opportunity here. I've got, really low rent. Yes, I was working at the time. I was working for another credit repair company, but I was, bringing home, $800-900 a week, which was fine, but I never saw Nick at all, my son, who was probably, when was this, 6-7 years ago now, just before I started Credit Fix Solutions. So, I was lonely every second weekend when he went to his, dad's, and I didn't have any other money coming in like child support. So it wasn't like I could take holidays and things like that. And I wasn't seeing Nick. So I just kind of got a bit tired of it, and I just quit one day, nothing against the business or anything like that. She's a great girl, a friend of mine for many years, but I just quit and took a time out. And then I spent a few months just working on myself, and that's what I talk about in the beginning of the book, from Zero to CEO, is actually you need to work on yourself before you can start working on a business, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So
can I just ask a few things as well?
Yeah, yeah,
because number one, the whole perceived stigma in housing commission or public housing. I mean, I thanks to that, you know, for my own family, as refugees, that was a great stepping stone. That was a great start, right? Yeah, so that's the first thing. The second thing that for you to have this mindset as well, did you attribute that to potentially, you know, was it your parents or potentially someone you worked with, or was it a conversation with one of the clients that made that, gave you that spark or anything like that? Or
I think, I mean, really, I guess when I was in housing, you know, Nick was at that local Catholic school. We started going to church because I figured, well, if I'm going to make him go to a Catholic school, we should go to church. And then I should, poor little bloke, you know.
Yep.
So we started going, and then I ended up, and my family's not religious at all, and I ended up kind of finding my faith and finding Jesus in that little church. And I think reading, especially for me, the New Testament, not to, you know, start getting religious and stuff like that, but reading the New Testament, reading, you know, how much love Jesus, you know, has for me, I was like, wow, like I am, you know, godly made and worldly made, and I can be whatever I can be. And it was that, all of a sudden I wasn't alone. And before that I had these limiting beliefs, right? Oh, I'm in housing, I'm a single mum, this is all I can do. And then all of a sudden I was like, no, actually I'm not alone, and I can do anything at all in the world. So that kind of just gave me the bump start to go, well, is $700 to $900 a week the rest of my life? Is single mum what I am, and I should just accept it? So that definitely gave me, kick up the backside.
Oh, there you go. And, and you were loved too, because like you said from the beginning, you moved from your stepdad and your mum, and so forth. So that must, you know, you were still loved. So
It was a great apartment. We had a great time. And I mean, when I quit my job, it wasn't that I was going to start Credit Fix Solutions at all. In fact, I love music. I played piano, flute and saxophone. I had a coming from the UK. I mean, growing up in the UK, my parents dragged us over here when I was like 16. But I went to a private girls' school and I had a scholarship, music scholarship. So music's always something that I've loved. So in my mind, I was like, I need to do something I love, you know.
I did not know that about you.
So I actually I got a diploma in audio engineering.
Oh, wow.
At the JMC Academy in the city. So I was doing that, and then I was like, oh, my savings aren't going to last forever, not that it was much. I better do something. So I thought, well, just go locally around, you know, 10 brokers, you know, Parramatta, and say, look, I'll do the work. If I'm successful, then you pay me. And it was almost but this one broker said to me, lovely bloke in Parramatta, he said, you know what, Victoria, he goes, you know that you're actually obliged to let every single broker know that you offer this service, because everywhere else they're charging up front. And of course, you know, it's those little things that stick in your head. That was just one of those things. I was like, crap, he's right. There's no credit repair services where people aren't paying up front, you know, and it's never guaranteed. And that always kind of grated me, right? So, and here we are. So here we are, national company 6 years later.
And you got a BDM presence in most states as
BDMs in each state, and they're amazing, absolutely amazing. Then we've got the scenarios team here who work closely with me, so I can monitor all the scenarios and make sure the quality of assessments is, you know, top notch, which is important. Because we're working for a couple of months to remove something, as you know, off somebody's credit report, taking a couple of months, that's a cost to us unless we can get a successful result. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
So I'll take you, I'll take the audience a step back as well, because obviously we're talking about the credit repair stuff, but you actually entered finance. You were a broker.
I was a very bad broker. So all the brokers out there listening, kudos to you, because I cannot do your job. I actually went from mortgage processing to broking, and I was good at mortgage processing. I've always been very good with details and writing and, you know, paperwork, which is why I now do all the written negotiations, you know, with Credit Fix Boys for my clients, because I just love it. So I was great at mortgage processing. So then when I got divorced, I thought, well, I can be a broker. And of course, as well, it was not of course, but it was 2006, 2007, GFC, and I'm in Parramatta trying to do home loans. Right. I mean, yeah. I would get credit reports that had been absolutely just smashed by 20 brokers before they got to me, and I had this tiny little office, and it was such a fail. It was the world's biggest fail. Yeah.
But through that though, you recognize there was an opportunity though too, right? Because we right now, as I'm talking to you, we're in September of 2020, we're in the midst of this pandemic. You know, people's credit reports are about to be smashed too.
Mm-hmm.
And given the fact that, you know, casting the audience back, unless you've been living under the rock, but there was at the very start of the pandemic, around about March, the government and some lenders gave customers the options to be on repayment holidays. Those are coming off, and some people weren't aware that repayment holidays were, you know, I suppose you put yourself in default.
Yeah, that's right. Especially if it's compounded and you have to come out 6 months and actually catch up with 6 months straight away, which I think a lot of consumers were confused about. Credit reports are getting slammed left, right, and center. We're busier than ever before. We've never been busy as we've been now. Yeah.
So I guess I'm going to ask you a kind of like a thought leadership question here.
Mm.
So you've gone into the game. I suppose you call it post GFC. Would that be fair to say post GFC to start the credit fix business?
Yeah,
and now we're heading into the pandemic and whatever, a recession and so forth. This is really the time to really for people who are offering credit to really engage with their. I mean, a business like yours, if they're checking the credit report first, I mean, that's the first thing a broker should check, right?
Look, we try and get out there with education as much as we can. And the first thing that we're trying to educate our brokers with is, look, you know, you might have even, for example, you've got the Equifax report and that's great. We still have some new brokers coming in going, oh, I don't run the report. And we're like, no, at least run the Equifax. But if you have a light bulb moment, right, with your clients, you're sitting there having a coffee with them, brokers visiting their homes, however you're seeing them at your office, and they say, you know, I went through a divorce 3 years ago, or whatever it might be, I lost a business a couple of years ago, or even COVID, it's not just that one credit report, it's actually three. And credit providers can report to one or two or all three, and we don't know which ones they're reporting to because it's all in the fine print, and who can be bothered to read that, right? So you know, and when we fix people's credit reports, you know, it might just be we're working off Equifax, but we make sure we email the client at the end and we say, hey, look, we've cleaned this report, but here's your links to your other two free reports, one with Ilion, one with Experian. Make sure you check those before your broker, you know, presses the submit button. It's very, very important. You know, it doesn't happen to us much, but, you know, a couple of times by accident, a credit provider hasn't removed it off, say, the Ilion report as well as the Equifax, and the client's kind of ignored our request to make sure you check. And then we get this abusive phone call two months later going, my loan was declined. I'm like, well, you didn't check your other report, you know?
So obviously it's the, I suppose you can call it the behavior repertoire for a broker to sit down with the customers here. Yeah. And then what should they do to engage with a business like a credit like yours? And obviously not give up, because obviously some people look at a credit report and go, you know what, I don't have the time.
You know what though, Deanne, what we've noticed the past few months is that brokers, especially they're holding on to every deal for dear life. And lending has tightened up significantly to the point where we get clients from brokers now. This time last year, we wouldn't get them, for example, with like a $200 paid telco default. Now, this time last year, brokers could get that across the line, but not this year. And plus, of course, the consumers themselves are more rate driven, because everyone's seeing the ads, get 2% refinance, save money. They don't want the non-bank lender rates, although they're good. They want to know what's the best rate. It's all about security from a consumer point of view.
Now, would you also say, the fact that late repayments are coming up more is affecting that?
Yeah, you wouldn't believe like how many people, and unfortunately, we have to turn a lot of them away because they haven't contacted their credit provider when the negative month's repayment history information has been listed. Right, so if you haven't contacted your credit provider, they're not to know. And therefore, the 1 month arrear or 2 months arrears that then occur before you speak to them are in fact legitimate and can't be removed. So, you know, when we're taking people on, we're saying, you know, yes, we can help you, but what's happened? And again, a full assessment, because, you know, they might pay us a refundable deposit, but at the end of the day, we have to give that back if we're not successful. So, you know, making sure. I mean, look, we have had successes with them, because the ones taking on, they're saying, no, I spoke to my lender and they said, no, don't worry about it. And, you know, you can see April, May, June is like 1, 2, and 3, and there's stuff they can't refinance, they can't move, their broker's freaking out, the poor things. So those ones we can get amended to zeros or R's for not reported, which then doesn't affect the score. But the level of inquiries consumers have been doing as well, like Zip Pay, Afterpay, you know, the amount of education we're doing with people where it's not actually, we're not making any money off it, but look, at least we're here to educate consumers, right? Because where else are they going to get that education?
Well, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, that's one of the things I bang on about with regards to last week was the Zip Pay and Pizza Hut announcement, right?
I saw that. I was like, you are kidding me, right?
Yeah, so I look at that and I know what I was when I was 18. Right.
Yeah,
18-year-old me is not going to think about 18.
I would have zip paid Pizza Hut every weekend.
Absolutely. That back then will be Pizza Hut, and I probably would have done that with Blockbuster videos as well as those CDs. Yeah. So, but you know, the education piece is fundamental.
Yes,
for the consumer, and I look back at school, we weren't taught the fundamentals.
And we're trying to get into unis, Deanne. You try and get into schools, and the schools tell you, no, sorry, we can only do recruitment. And it's like, you're going to tell them how to dress to go to a job interview. Good luck with that. Great life skills. You know, the parents teach them how to dress, but to get in and get that time, there's so much red tape. But we're doing a research piece over with Edith Cowan University over in WA. I call him the nutty professor. Professor Tom Moy is a great bloke and thinks outside the square. And he said as well, he goes, it's not just the universities, he goes, it's actually the professors. They just follow the regime. They follow the books. He goes, some of these textbooks that students are reading in business and finance degrees, he goes, they're so old. But he's thinking outside the square. So I'm actually presenting at Edith Cowan Uni next month. I mean, obviously on Zoom. But what Dr. Tom Moore would like to do with that is actually roll that out as a very small unit, as a component for all business finance students, eventually all uni students, whatever degree you're doing, is here's comprehensive credit reporting, and here's a multiple choice that you need to pass at the end. Just to teach them. Like, did you know when you sign up for gas, if you just leave and then don't close it, you're going to have a default?
Yeah, actually. Yeah. I mean, and everyone will do that when they're at uni, right? You get flatmates.
You can't remove them. No. So it's not, saying, oh, no, I don't want to do this because it's taking business away from myself. These are defaults that you actually can't remove because they're valid. Someone's just been, as they say when they call us, oh, I was just young and dumb. And I'm like, well, I can't go to the bank and say, I'm sorry, he was young and dumb. Can you please remove the default? It doesn't, you know.
No, it doesn't work. We've had, obviously, I've been in the banks before, and we've had, you know, the conversations where flatmates have gone overseas, someone else has taken over, and then they don't, and then the flatmate comes back, and their report's shot. Right? Yeah.
No car loan for you.
No car loan, no home loan for you. And I think, I'll be honest, it's not just the students, but really to the would-be entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
This should be a course rather than just, hey, you know, these are the things you should do if you're going to open up a noodle shop. You should make sure your chopsticks are clean, for example, but how about making sure you don't bugger up your credit report?
You make me hungry now.
I'm sorry. I say that only because, you know, when we were, myself and my wife and another friend, were looking at opening a business. We did all the planning for everything, but then no one actually, there was nothing to go, hey, you know, you may be looking at credit or applying for a loan.
No.
And these are the things you should worry about, because you don't. you know, and then, you know, most of the, they say that the, you know, the small business owners are the engine of Australia, right? Or yeah. most countries anyway.
Yeah, I reckon you either work for government or you run your own business in Australia. I'm pretty much sure that,
yeah. that's the case. And you're going to be borrowing things and you'll, borrowing money and you will have bills. And, you know, and most businesses we're seeing right now is basically 1-2 months on the edge of disaster.
Yep. And you know what? I've put all of that as much as I can into the book as well. Mm-hmm. So it's not just about starting a business and step-by-step guide and how to do social media. It actually talks about finance and the importance of understanding your credit report, because this isn't just a book for someone even starting out. I mean, this is a book for people who have a small business who maybe aren't great at everything, just to make sure that they are educated in all areas. Because you're right, like we'll have business, even business people who've been in the game for a while, we'll speak to them and say, like, did you know that this is what, you know, these sorts of inquiries are doing to your report? They're like, no. And what would be great, obviously, in theory, which is never going to happen, is wherever you go for a loan, they give you an information sheet that says, you know, this, this, and this. You know, if you inquire, this will happen.
You don't read it.
It's never, like, imagine your bank manager going, would you like some education on credit reporting before we start? You know, it's never.
No, because the person's going to, just give me the money.
Yeah. I want the house. The wife wants the house. Just get it for me. Yeah,
exactly. So, no, it is. How do you, so I'm going to ask you a silly question, right?
Yeah.
How do you find making this subject, because finance is pretty stale, and I've said this many times, right?
Yeah.
Interesting to a 19-year-old listening to you at uni.
You just have
that same word?
Storytelling, DN. So one of the, yeah, I know what you mean. So, and this is actually a true story. My brother's mate, this is back in the day when we lived in Toongabby, when we first came to Australia, of all places to land in Australia from the UK. Anyway, so there we are.
I still don't have no idea what that is.
Toongabby, Western Sydney, is near Blacktown.
Right, okay.
But we used to joke and call it Toonga Bay. Anyway, so my brother's friend, right, he comes over one weekend and we're like 18, 19, whatever. And he's like, he goes, I think I've stuffed up. And me and my brother are like, what? Because we all grew up, you know, a few years together. Mate, I was a bit older than them. Nick's like 2 years younger than me, my little brother. But he comes in and he's like, I think I've stuffed up. What have you done? And this is just kind of when internet come in and you could go online to apply for things. So I tell this story and it does make the students laugh. And I say, he actually went online on a weekend and applied 100 times for a loan.
Okay. Yep.
No lie. Like he'd managed to go and grab his credit report from, it was Vida then, wasn't it? Managed to CRA, whatever it was, got his credit report and no word of a lie, had like 80 to 100 inquiries. And it by telling stories, silly stories like that, you're engaging with them. And then throwing in the stories of, you know, we have a client calling us like, did you know if you sign up a GAS that you're going to move out and go to uni maybe, or maybe they're at uni and we're talking to them and so they are uni students. It's just telling them stories about how, you know, gas and electricity bills come into play, zip pay, and that's pretty much, that's how you engage them. Because they remember stories and they remember something funny, but that's always when I use the 100 inquiries over a weekend. So
I'm just going to also just sort of, I suppose, close off on that one by saying, I did say zip pay and Pizza Hut is... It's a very good financial instrument. You need to double check the T's and C's. But, you know, I'm not saying it's bad. Every financial instrument has its place if you know how to budget. That's it.
But I like it is, that. It was very, very cool.
Well, yeah. I think I sound like one of those uncool dads now that keep on telling your kids to just be careful. But I know when I was 20, I listened to my dad. You know,
Like we've got teenagers now, and you know, we say that they're all brain damaged because it's the only way we try and kill them every 5 minutes. Because how can you hurt someone who's got brain damage? God love him. You know?
On that as well. So, your son now.
Yes.
How old is he now?
Nick is 14.
He's 14, so a couple of years away from being able to drive.
Yeah, and that comes up as a conversation every day.
Really?
Pretty much. So,
yeah. Excellent. Because I like I said, I think one of the things that stood out was when I saw you posted about your beautiful card. Like, oh my God, that's awesome.
You mean the Aston?
Sorry, what?
The Aston Martin.
Yes, yes, you know, well, look, every boy grows up wanting to be James Bond, right? So, and the name is of the Aston Martin and James Bond is very synonymous.
Yeah.
So I love to wrap up this podcast by saying, hey, you know, next time when I come up to Sydney, is any chance I could have a drive?
100%. 100%. We'll go for a spin. Yeah, she's a beautiful car. And in fact, you just reminded me, because I remember when I first bought it and I went and picked up Nick from school. And although he probably didn't notice, but out the corner of my eye, I could see him, you know, looking at me like he thought I was the coolest mum on the planet. And I was like, okay, so that's what it takes. As a parent, you just need a supercar and your teenagers will think you're cool. That's all you need, everyone. That's all you need. Just,
you know. Well, I, you know what? I think I thought you were pretty freaking cool having that anyway. So,
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. So if we can close off this little podcast quickly anyway, then is there anything, if you were to meet your 18-year-old self right now, would you say to your 18-year-old self to do something different than what's happened now? Or have the things that have happened to you made you who you are and you wouldn't have changed the world?
Look, everything that's happened to me, good and bad, makes me who I am. But, you know, in the book I tell people, girls and guys, is go for the real qualities in people and surround yourself by good people. You know, don't look at, I know I've got one now, but don't look at flashcards. No, because it's like, I know I sound like a hypocrite, right? But actually don't. You know, I look to all of that as rude being cool. You know, boyfriend with a flash car, you know, Gucci, whatever, is just stop, because that's the wrong level of happiness. And if I'd known that, I think I would have taken a different path and maybe even been successful even earlier, rather than making those mistakes. That would just be the one thing I tell myself, is just be kind to yourself and surround yourself with good people, you know, people who are humble, who are honest, who are kind, you know, and not selfish and money focused. Because I, coming from such a poor background, even growing up, right, housing when I was a kid in England, my one thing was money. You know, growing up, I need to get out of this. You know, I need money. So,
Well, there you go. The I suppose the background, my one was fairly similar as well. We grew up in a housing commission for a flat before we got our own house. And then my dad would actually make me, you know, we were poor, but he would still make me go and play the violin and join in the orchestras, which usually the rich kids in Christchurch would be doing, and I just felt so out of place.
Yeah, look, it's so funny that you've got that story as well, because that was me. I got bullied my first year in private school because I came from a poor family. The girls wouldn't speak to me. So I was adamant I was going to have, I mean, when I bought that car, it wasn't just about the car. It was that whole, all right, stuff is all. Everyone who bullied me, everyone who put me down, you know. Yeah,
but you got a reward for all your hard work. I mean, you know, you blood, sweat, and tears you put into that business.
Yeah,
and there would have been, I think, years when you probably wouldn't have had anything to yourself, right? So
100%.
My final thought though, and my compliment actually, you've still got your English accent, whereas I've been called a traitor because I've lost my
Kiwi. You are a total traitor. I'm surprised he even still speaks to you. You know what though, Deanne, it comes and goes. Like, if you get me up at an event, FBWA or whatever, up in Queensland, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, how's it going? Nice to see you. You know, I turn Aussie. But then if you get me talking about my past, it's almost like I go back to being in England. So then so it does come and go. Give me a glass of wine and I sound like a posh. It's weird. It's really weird.
No, I definitely, I commend you on that one. That's for sure. Thank you so much for taking your time out of your busy day to do this. I wish you all the best. Hopefully, the link for Victoria's book will be in the post as well. So, love for you guys to check it out. Zero to CEO. I salute you, Victoria. Thank you very much for your time.